Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show weekdays. We start at 11. We go until 2. It's 2 p.m. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM. You can always listen online at our website, which is DePietro.com. It's time for our segment, Politics This Week. Joining us, he is the managing editor for AnchorRising.com. It is Justin Katz. And Justin, I'd actually like to start off with the soccer stadium. It's I think because of what's going on with the bridge, it's not getting as much attention as normally, you know, that it should. But just curious to hear your thoughts regarding the financing that we've learned of just how much the state has now had to put out in order to make this a reality.
Well, this is the problem, and it's a problem that is especially bad with using government to finance these things. Once the politicians are in, once everybody's lined up, there's no end to it because they've got to keep it going. There's no such thing as a sunk cost in politics. There's no point where the ruling regime, unless it's replaced, can say, okay, that was a bad idea. We lost $50 million and we're just going to eat it and move on. And so you get this where it's constantly having to adjust. They're invested in this. The governor in particular, McKee, having jumped on the Commerce Board to pass the decisive vote to do this whole project, is definitely invested. And so as the interest rates go up, as other costs go up, they're backstopped. They're backstopped by the taxpayer. And that's just the way it's going to be. And it's important to keep in mind, too, and this might be a little bit of an abstract point, or a little bit of an obtuse point for some people, but these bonds that go out, we learned during 38 Studios and that whole fiasco, a lot of people learned that they're really a scam, because basically they're revenue bonds, or they're not necessarily backed by the full faith and credit of the people of Rhode Island, but there's no way the government's not going to pay them. So they're certain debt, but they have higher interest rates because there's supposedly some risk, and they're not generally just available to the Joe investor on the street, or you or me wants to go pick up a Tidewater bond or whatever. They're institutional investors. And so it's a big scam that a lot of people make a lot of money on, investing in the bonds, then building the stadium through the unions. All of that stuff piles up to take tax dollars. And there's no incentive for anybody to just go, you know what, this is getting out of hand. And I think it's interesting that you raise the bridge. Well, if our infrastructure is so terrible, how is the bridge going to affect the ability of Tidewater to perform? What about other bridges that are nearby, other infrastructure that might be collapsing, that instead we're spending four times the principal, apparently, on interest? It's a dangerous situation, and without enough verification. I mean, McKee in recent articles about this has said, oh, it's going to greatly improve the economy around there. Will it? Do you have any evidence of that? Maybe. I mean, it's kind of an assumption you'd expect to make, but it'd be good to see some evidence before you're investing millions and millions of dollars in these deals. And it's kind of shocking for anybody who's ever been involved in any kind of even moderately sized corporate asset purchase or anything like that, or any kind of corporate decision that takes a lot of millions of dollars. A lot goes into it. It's not just, yeah, I think this will be good for the company. Let's spend $50 million. Oh, I mean $100 million. Oh, I mean $138 million. That doesn't happen when people have their own money invested. And for all these reasons, I think Rhode Islanders really need to start waking up to this scam, because it really is a scam. And I think the progressives in particular, sorry to rant here, but the progressives in particular have to start paying attention. You know, they'll talk about a corporate CEO who's not paying another dollar an hour for employees, but here you've got a whole insider system led by our government and the labor unions ripping people off and taking our money. It really ought to get a lot more attention than it does.
Folks, again, we're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, AnchorRising.com. Justin, one of the things also, let's talk about, I mean, this is a completely different scenario than the one that was laid out for everyone. And I just don't understand why more people don't object. And I mean elected officials saying, you know, if this had been what they had presented back at the, you know, when they first came into inception, then it probably wouldn't have passed. This is a completely different proposal. This is also one of the dangers, I think, of they talk about that once they start a project like this, they come up with whatever the term is, but basically rewrite orders where the costs just balloon because it just keeps getting added onto. This was not the package that was presented. I think the only reason that it's even being built now is because Governor McKee, to get elected, promised organized labor that he'd let them build a $150 million soccer stadium, because other than that, there's no market for it. This absolutely makes no sense at all.
Well, I think that's exactly right, and then that's endemic in government. It's not only these projects. It's a lot of law, a lot of policy that gets implemented is exactly like that. Oh, we're going to do this, and they'll say whatever to get it over the finish line, and they'll just expect that people aren't going to notice as the deal changes. And the classic line of Darth Vader and what is it, Empire Strikes Back, or the not Lando Calrissian said, "Oh, this deal with Darth Vader keeps getting worse." It's always like that in government, and I think that's exactly right. But there's nobody to pay attention because there's nobody who has that investment in, or that the interest to do that. There's nobody who stands to lose millions of dollars because this goes through, and that's a real problem. And in that regard, it starts to come back to the problem of having no opposition party in the state, because there's nobody to take advantage. Everybody is bought off, as I said, the investors, the labor unions, the progressives, the insider politicians, they're all in on the game, and so there's nobody who benefits by making a controversy of it. Really, there's no effective, say, Republican opposition to make this. If there were a line and this controversy could get a Republican gubernatorial candidate over the finish line, they'd be making a lot bigger deal of it, and people would know about it. But that's not the case, and it really goes, everything seems to go right back to this core problem that our civic society in Rhode Island is just busted, and it's going to be very expensive, and it's going to be hurting people for years and decades to come, and mounting.
Justin, let's talk about the bridge. The latest is it just continues to be a head scratcher. They're going to have some House oversight hearings. I heard the governor's not thrilled about it, but the latest now is they rolled out this, it's an app, or if you go on the DOT state website, they tell you how long it'll take to get from wherever you're going. You put in, where you're starting with and where you go. And I do like the fact that some, I think it was Channel 10 or other, maybe others, but at least Channel 10 sent their reporters. They were using the app, and sure enough, it was way off from what the actual time was. The reporters would say, the app said it would take 20 minutes. It took 46 minutes. What are your thoughts on McKee continuing trying to almost like undo the narrative of how long it actually takes to get from point A to point B?
Yeah, it's just bizarre, that aspect. And I mean, the only explanation I can come up with is that he just doesn't want to admit what a disaster it is, which the first step to solving a problem is admitting that it's a problem. And he's
Right.
not willing to do that, which is horrible. I like to think it was actually John Marion of Common Cause tweeted out, because one of the news stations had said it took you were going an average of 3 miles an hour from the state line to the bridge, and he pointed out that that's the average walking speed of a human being. I mean, that's how bad we've gotten. And I think some of it's with this recent change of the traffic patterns we discussed last week that some resident came up with or something like that. But with the app, it seems to me like a giant waste of resources. A giant. Why would anybody expect it to be accurate? Why? And why do we need it? There, you've got Google, you've got Apple. There are map programs out there that tell you how long it's going to take if you're trying to plan a trip, and I'm sure they're much more accurate than this app. So it's just another gimmick rather than trying to just say, you know what, put all that aside. This is horrible, folks. We're on it. We're doing whatever we can. And as I keep saying, I'm going to beat this drum till it's done, till the project's done, and we can move on with everything. In 20 years, if they were serious, they'd be talking about the things that make it so slow to fix things in Rhode Island. At least for this project, they'd be suspending all the ridiculous labor rules. They'd be going to the labor unions and saying, "This is a giant problem. You need to come to the table right now so we can get this fixed right away. We're not going to the federal government to ask for money, or only to ask for money. We're going for them to jump in and say, what can we make easier on you? Because this is a major thoroughfare for the entire Northeast," or it is at the moment. I don't know. Once this continues on and on, maybe we'll be just bypassed, and there'll be new roadways and new ways people get to the Northeast from the West and South. But that's what ought to be done. Not apps. Apps is like a student solution to a problem in a classroom. It's dumb. It's not going to get anything done. Nobody should trust the government app telling you how bad the government is doing. And it's redundant data that we already have out there through private companies.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Politics this week. Justin Katz, managing editor, anchorrising.com, right here on The John DePietro Show.
The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994, that's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln.
Our segment is Politics This Week. With us is Justin Katz, managing editor, anchorrising.com. Justin, I want to stay on the bridge just for a moment because I thought last week was a good example where on Thursday, now this was dry weather, no rain, no snow, and the traffic, it really is something to see that it was taking 86 minutes. And I applaud the TV stations for mapping this out for people and doing it in real time, but it took 86 minutes to get from the state line of Massachusetts to the 195, you know, you either go 95 south or then you continue 95 north. That split off point, 86 minutes. That normally should be a 5-minute ride. And I saw a lot of talk online. Oh, maybe it's because of it's Thursday, or maybe it's because of, like, that's how the lunacy of this has become, where they're just not, to me, accepting that this is a major problem that's going to continue, and let alone, you know, we're on the cusp of what's going to be a major winter storm coming down the pike.
Well, certainly, but I mean, it's exactly what I meant when I said that infrastructure in Rhode Island kills more people than guns, or it is now, because that's what happens. And it's not going to be, I think the problem may even start to get lighter, but because people are finding other ways to go about their lives, they're finding other ways to drive around. They're not going into Providence. They're working from home. They get another job because they can't take the commute anymore. That's, people will start to adjust. And that's deadly for any East Providence. It's deadly for Providence. It's deadly for all the communities in the East Bay. I mean, you hear of realtors who, when, you know, big higher paid people come in, they bring them to East Greenwich and Barrington. Well, take Barrington off the list, because if it's going to take you 90 minutes to cross a bridge from Barrington to Providence, it's just not worth it. Right. Property values are going to plummet there in that regard. And so it's a giant problem. And it's astonishing that, as you say, nobody's, oh, well, maybe it's because it's Thursday. What? No, this is no. It's because the bridge is out. That's why. That's the only reason. And all of that other talk, the only explanation other than people just don't know how to process how horrible it is here. Maybe we've just gotten so used to it being bad in Rhode Island that we can't even process real problems. But the explanation, I think, is that nobody actually wants to solve the real problems, because they all go back to the core corruption and the core rot in Rhode Island. And everybody in Rhode Island, the reason it survived so long is everybody is getting a piece of it. And everybody has their own investment, whether it's the investment or the unions or the politicians or the media who have the inside scoop because they play nice. All of that stuff, everybody has some investment in this. And so we're not going to get it fixed.
Now, Justin Katz, there was also something last week, and it was Kathy Gregg that reported it happening out at the State House. The gun control drive begins with 2838 Senators co-sponsoring safe storage requirement, but union backing is this year. And what I saw is, I didn't see any follow-up of, and there the picture is Pat Crowley. Now, to me, the angle that almost needs to be explored is, he's not doing that because he believes in the issue. He's not doing that out of whatever, his own goodwill. To me, this reeks of, he has cut some deal that, and there's a quid pro quo, we want this, and if you'll grant us whatever this is behind the curtain, we'll get you your gun control. I think, you know, this is a dangerous development, that it's like they're venturing off into other causes where they see groups that fall short. Hey, if you cut a deal, and give us what we want, then, you know, we'll push this and we'll hammer the people that are not on board and we'll, you know, really go after them. What is your thoughts on, I was surprised there wasn't more follow-up as to, you know, what exactly is this going to cost that he's agreeing to do this?
Well, you know, I wonder, it's an interesting idea whether he's trading for actual union business. I'm not actually sure that's the case. I mean, it's been pretty obvious to me for...
I meant union bills.
Yeah, well, union yeah, business. But I mean, that's but right. I, but as if okay. he, as if his primary, Carly's primary concern is his members and his labor union, and he's just trading favors for that. I'm not sure that's the case, because if you look back at bills back 15 years, even social issues, say like same-sex marriage, the unions were funding the activists on that. They were funding, they were there live on all of those, anything that's left-wing. And in fact, in, I think it was 2012, there was a progressive conference in Rhode Island. I think it was called Netroots Nation, if I'm remembering correctly. And Pat Crowley and George Nee did a panel, and they talked about the everything union model, where we're going to put all these far left causes in a union model, and we're going to treat ourselves as a giant activist labor union. So that all led me to conclude that really the labor unions, they provide member services. That's how they get their money and their political influence, by being associated with labor. But the real reason they're doing it, that's just to collect money and influence. The real reason they're doing it is to push these far left causes. And what strikes me is, I wonder how many construction workers, how many blue collar workers are out there thinking or even aware of, hey, why is my labor union trying to infringe on my Second Amendment rights? I mean, it used to be the idea that a lot of these organized labor folks were salt of the earth, blue collar people. I mean, Pat Crowley's not just a teacher union person anymore. He's representing all those folks who, many of them are actually pretty politically conservative. I hear from them every now and then when I tweet something about labor unions, and they attack me, but then I'll look at their profiles, and they support all kinds of conservative causes. I wonder how many of them just don't really realize that they are funding this left wing organizing. So I think, to me, that picture of Pat Crowley in the red sweater vest and all that, supporting gun control, that is just more another bit of evidence that they're letting the freak flag fly now. They're just out there. They run the state. They don't care. They're flipping the switch on communism a la labor union in Rhode Island. That's the message I start to get.
Justin, it's a bill that would force all employers of over 500 people in Rhode Island immediately give their employees a 10% increase in pay to work a standard 40-hour work week. What is so outrageous about this is there are already designed rules you have to follow and so forth. This really cuts into that suddenly they want to control all the businesses. It's not the role of the state house to get involved and make these types of demands on the local, you know, employers.
Well, these kinds of bills, you know, when in the last decade, there were a few years in a row where I read every bill that was submitted, and it is a very depressing activity, because the things that these legislators put in, they really ought to disqualify them. And it really started to make me think about, who are you? You know, who are you, Mr. Progressive Legislator, or Mr. whatever you do for your job? None of them are qualified to be making giant, you know, ultra international CEO level decisions about how businesses should run. And yet they presume to, because they think they have no idea how money is made, how productivity works. They have no idea. So they pass these bills. These things are devastating. And I've been saying for years, I don't think it's one thing you could kind of say, well, a lot of these bills get killed. They're just for show for their constituents. They're never going to go anywhere. I think they have an effect. You know, honestly, if I'm looking at where to start a business, where to do anything with business, and I start to see these bills come and popping up in a general assembly, you never know. You spend $100 million, $200 million, whatever, setting up a shop in Rhode Island, getting everything organized, and you're ready to go and start. And then all of a sudden, not only, as we've discussed before, do you have the labor unions knocking on your door like, hey, this is a nice business you got here. Shame if something were to happen to it. Not only do you get that, but the legislature at any point could say, yeah, next year we're just going to increase your labor cost by 20% at any time. They could do that. And I think that's why we're seeing the economic collapse of the state and things falling apart as they are. And it's only going to get worse. But people really need to start asking themselves when they see these bills, who is this person who's submitting this bill? What is their expertise that they think this will work just fine? Where's that money going to come from? How can you just promise everybody, okay, we're gonna cut your work week by 8 hours or a full day of work just because we can give it to you? And frankly, this is what people have warned about democracy. De Tocqueville, from the beginning of the United States, was once people realize they can vote themselves more, they'll start doing it. And I think that's what we see in these kind of ridiculous progressive laws or bills.
Folks, quick break, much more ahead. Politics this week, Justin Katz, managing editor, anchorrising.com, right here on the John DePietro Show.
All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial, fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today. 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today. 401-521-0200.
Our segment is Politics This Week. With us is Justin Katz, managing editor, anchorrising.com. Justin, some of the other stories, and it was actually Attorney General Peter Noronha put this out. How about according to the federal CMS data, the median emergency room wait time in Rhode Island is 4 hours. That's the median, and we come out at 49 ranked of 50 states. Justin, how is that possible that the smallest state would have at median time, 4 hour emergency room wait if you go and it's, quote, and it is urgent and an emergency?
Well, it's outrageous, but it's predictable for the reasons we're talking about just a minute ago with businesses. I mean, to the extent that General Assembly wants to mess with private businesses, they've done that even more with the healthcare system. And that's part of a larger problem we're facing around the country. It's really just a collapse of the system. I think Obamacare had a lot to do with it, and then of course Rhode Island jumped right into it, and everybody starts to forget these things where anywhere that Obamacare allowed a state to ratchet it up, we did. So we're given a lot of free healthcare. We're moving more and more towards single payer, where people don't have to think before they go to the doctor. They just, because somebody else is paying for it. There's no plus or minus. A lot of them don't bother going to a primary care. They go to they go right to the emergency room. A lot of the times, primary care, because of regulations or because of the difficulty getting those jobs, or the difficulty setting up shop in that way, there's another crisis that actually Peter Noronha points out from time to time as well, of primary care doctors. So you don't have a primary care doctor, or they're too busy. They say go to the emergency room, so you just go to the emergency room. There aren't enough emergency room doctors. There's not enough infrastructure to handle that. They can't make any profit from it. It's a big, big problem. And what makes it even worse and scarier for me, and I've been watching this with Noronha for at least the past couple months while he's been focusing on this issue from time to time, is nobody has solutions. He has no solutions. He just wants to, he moves toward the progressive single payer route with this. There's no, he'll attack private companies, whatever, but there's nobody who's looking at the real problems of why is this happening? And it's happening for a lot of reasons, such as medical mandates, insurance mandates. You have to cover this. You have to do that. that raises costs for everybody. It increased demand for things that people otherwise wouldn't do if they had to pay for them themselves or had some investment in it. And nobody knows what the prices are. So the insurance companies are just trying to make their money, and it's a mess. But it all goes back to just fundamentals of economics. And that's why so few people talk about it, and why, I mean, Nirona doesn't seem to have any answers, but it's good that he's pointing it out.
Yeah, I just picture someone getting in their car. They have a family member. They drive to the emergency room. I hear from them that when they enter, I've had people say they're the only ones that were speaking English. There's large families, large groups of people who don't speak English. They use the emergency room as almost like a free clinic. And then at the same time, I've been with police. If there's someone intoxicated, instead of they have to go home or they just make sure they can't drive, no. If they immediately, the rescue comes up, fire department, they put them in a rescue, they go right to the hospital. Now, they're not in the waiting room. They're immediately seen. So I feel for the people that do the right thing, which is get in their car and just, you know, drive to an emergency room. But they're surrounded by people that are not following, I don't think, following or abusing the system. Now, Justin, how about the headline? The movie that's continuing to be shot, they said the producers settled on Rhode Island because of the efforts of the administration of Governor Dan McKee. This is something you and I have touched on. It's a story of this unlikely story of a lieutenant governor who becomes governor. The name is similar. I'll also let on with you. I have heard that a family member is in the film, and then I reached out to his office, and they won't even give me, just tell me no. I think it's a yes or no question. But they refused to answer that. So I just got a kick out of that. He was so gung-ho. And I just think with everything going on, it's the novelty of it. Any thought on that, that he absolutely wanted this filmed in Rhode Island?
Well, you do wonder. You know, there's so much of Rhode Island that's up for grabs, and you know, you've still got all the federal stimulus money or from the COVID. Who knows what he was able to say, like, hey, I'll backroll your movie for some millions of dollars of taxpayer money if you star my cousin and maybe you could name the character so much like me. That would be neat. You know, it'd be really interesting to see the backstory because the overlaps, a lieutenant governor who becomes governor named McKay instead of McKee is filmed in Rhode Island, and they're thanking him for all of how they made it so easy for them to come to Rhode Island. There's a lot there, and it seems I have to admit, if I were in his position and with everything going on in the state that was my responsibility, getting a movie to Rhode Island would be the absolute last thing on my mind.
Agreed. There's something there.
That it's primary. That's the whole benefit, I guess, of being in politics in Rhode Island is you get to pretend you're a big wheeler dealer with Hollywood.
Miguel Nunez, longtime Rhode Island Board of Staffer, he gets the nod as the executive director. What I immediately noticed was they always keep it in house. They don't want anybody outside. A longtime staffer to me, that just means he knows the drill. I don't know this particular individual, but you know, they never want an outsider seeing how things are done. I think if there's any place that could use an outsider, it'd be the Rhode Island Board of Elections.
Yeah, you would think so. The good rule of thumb to apply to all these sorts of hires is to add the phrase after a nationwide search before the sentence. So after a nationwide search, they promoted the person who everybody expected to be promoted. So, you know, on one hand, you know, that's kind of how you'd expect it to work. People know the system. They just rise up the ranks, and it's all as well and good. But I think there's something to this idea that the Board of Elections just not want to get outsiders looking over their shoulder. And it'd be different if we had, if the Board of Elections tended toward competence and weren't a politically appointed board, and that it would be different if that were the case, but there's just nowhere that we're getting independence. And so, you know, I'd like to say great, you know, promote from within people who know the system. But we there's just no way, again and again, we see this, there's just no way to get an outside perspective on things or any kind of healthy competition or opposition in any of these agencies. And we've seen it with, say, education commissioners. You know, Deborah Gist came in and actually started to do some different stuff, and the unions organized and booted her. So that's what you get. And you know, I guess in some respects, Rhode Islanders deserve what they get from these boards.
I did interview Rhode Island Secretary of State Greg Amore. I plan to have several. I'd like to have several conversations with him. I'd like your thoughts on it as I've listened to it. Something that sticks out at me right away is when they talk about, you know, someone manipulating the signatures. He doesn't mention Matos, and I could have brought that up, but he instead mentions the situation with Vivek. They go out of their way to mention that. Something else that stood out to me, but I do want to hear your thoughts, is just, you know, if there's any extreme example, you know, why is an X accepted signature? What if somebody has a stroke and then they can't? Like, it's always the most extreme as opposed to what's the real norm. I did, you know, I was actually kind of disappointed. I mean, I appreciate him giving me the time and access, but the talking points are down the way our voting is. It doesn't give me a lot of confidence, but I'd like your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, it's great that you had him on and were able to ask questions that he doesn't probably get asked very often. But the talking points were kind of disappointing. In some ways, it's almost like, you know, isn't this a really open opportunity for fraud? And the answer is not very far from, yeah, but that's a good thing. You know, there's a lot of that when you start asking about, say, shouldn't we have a limit on a number of ballots that somebody can collect and harvest, and others, and so he has just finished telling you that you know, where the mail ballots and all this stuff, we're just trying to be like other states. A lot of states have it the same way, and then you point out, well, other states have limits, and he's, oh well, you know, yeah, whatever, we're doing it this way. But it's because, you know, what if somebody doesn't have a relative to bring an air mail ballot, and their neighbor has to do it? Okay, how does a limit affect that? Like, how many people are there? How many collecting hundreds of ballots from their neighbors purely because their neighbors have nobody else to vote? I mean, that sort of stuff just doesn't pass this laugh test. And, you know, when you asked about Senator Anna Quezada and her strategy of ballot harvesting in Providence, I mean, it seemed pretty clear to me. I mean, I think he actually explicitly said, hey, I'm fine with that strategy, you know, but I don't think it'll scale. Well, of course it'll scale. Campaigns at the statewide level, and especially Congress and Senate, they've got millions of dollars. They can scale a ballot harvesting system, and that's what they're certainly doing. And I think that's, so my takeaway from that was, yeah, he was saying essentially, yeah, that's why we're doing this. We're doing this to make it a broad strategy so that we can just control elections and control who can possibly be elected. And I think that's what's disappointing. And I think there's one important note here to take it to another kind of a media level. Is, so you're asking these questions, and you, me, your audience, we've had these thoughts, we've discussed them. So he comes on, he answers some questions, and most of us are probably going to go, yeah, you didn't really answer the question very well. But a lot of people go, okay, well, at least he's thought about it. You know, so there's all, the only thing that's going to happen there is that he'll soften opposition to this bill. But when the mainstream media doesn't ask these questions, if say Ted Nesi were to ask this question on Newsmakers, a lot of people watching that won't even know this is an issue. So they'll learn right. That it's an issue. So it might move in the other direction. And I think that's one of the, that was kind of jumped out at me as well, is it's all about softening opposition to government because the news media doesn't ask the questions like that, exactly. That ought to be answered. And people don't even learn that it's a problem. Wait, you can go out and collect as many ballots as you want, and it can be organized throughout the state. Wait a second, I didn't know that. I bet there are a lot of people who don't know it because the questions just aren't asked. So even if he had that kind of soft milquetoast answer, just making people aware of the problem would be helpful, but that doesn't get done.
AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall Plaster and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, the big game has come and gone. Kind of depressing to me as a Patriot fan, only because we remember what that was like. Talk of a dynasty. I also was thinking that if you look back to, you know, they were saying it's the first time in quite some time that any team has won back-to-back. And the Chiefs now would like to try to go for three in a row. Folks, you go to, you know, Patriots. If Malcolm Butler had played against the Eagles, I believe the Patriots could have won. They could have won three in a row. They came back against Atlanta. They beat the Rams. In between there was the Eagles Super Bowl. I think the Patriots could have, you know, that was the team, let alone then when they, you know, beat Seattle with Malcolm Butler. But it's tough to look at that. And now, you know, Belichick would not, he barely played in the game. Malcolm Butler, who was the star who saved the Super Bowl for the Patriots against the Seahawks, something happened the night before. And he was essentially benched, and they gave up so many points. That was another example of that Matt Patricia was just not the guy. So, but anyhow, it was quite the spectacle to watch. Well, we'd see how the numbers come out. It was really, the NFL just has it going on all cylinders right now. Now, closer to home, snowstorm in the forecast. A lot of snow. Tuesday's going to be a very difficult day. Tuesday morning is going to be very difficult, as a matter of fact. You could be getting 2 inches an hour, 3 inches an hour, depending on where you are. I think it also sets up, though. Normally, you would think, okay, so everybody just stay off the road on on Tuesday. Good day to maybe work from home or make other arrangements, what have you. The snow's going to start very early into the commute. I believe I saw it's going to start snowing at like 3 in the morning. So around 6 to 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be pretty heavy snow. And then the storm moves out late afternoon. So a quick storm, but substantial amount of snowfall. And then farther north, Boston's really going to get hit. But it also, to me, adds into the fact that you have major road problems in the state. And major, you know, who immediately now when we hear about that there's going to be a snowstorm, all I start thinking about is just how different. Now, today, again, is fine, but the weather's going to be really difficult. I can't even imagine around the bridge. The bridge, 195, that's a problem in good weather, let alone what we're looking at and is essentially going to affect the area on Tuesday. So, you know, but that will now be, I believe, that's going to be a problem all week. That's not just going to be a problem the day of the storm. That's going to be a problem because then you're still going to have snow and ice that is left there, very, very dangerous. I think this is TJ Del Santo from WPRI has the latest now.
Day on Tuesday. So that's what we're looking at pretty much all over Rhode Island now in that winter storm warning. There's the storm kind of taking shape down there in the deep south. All that moisture headed our way for late tonight and tomorrow. Today, no problem at all. Looking at sunshine, mild temperatures again. The precipitation begins well after midnight. Initially a mix, and then it turns to a heavy snow for the Tuesday morning commute, continuing into the afternoon, winding down during the early evening across the area. Then Wednesday, Valentine's Day, looks to be pretty quiet, although a little windy and kind of cold. All right, here's your forecast for today. We are expecting to see temperatures topping out in the upper 40s to around 50 degrees. Winds from the west generally 5 to 10 miles an hour. For tonight, dry in the evening, clouds thickening up. We'll see the precipitation, the snow, sleet, and rain developing after midnight. It quickly turns over to a heavy snow, and that will continue throughout the daytime tomorrow, along with some strong wind gusts as well. Temperatures low 30s. Travel will be difficult throughout the entire day. Winds from the northeast, 10 to 20 miles an hour, gusting 35, maybe to 40, will make driving conditions even more difficult. All right, here's the general forecast. 8 to 12 inches across the Providence metro area. Less down near the South Shore, maybe a little bit more in the usual snow belt of Rhode Island, where it will be a little colder. 10 to 15 inches expected up there. All right, here's your forecast for Wednesday. Sunshine, about 34 degrees. You can always get the updated forecast anytime.
So, folks, heavy, heavy snow. By the way, northern part of the state, looking at 8 to 12. So, but it is a problem when then, again, I don't have to go in that area. I'm not going to go in that area. This is a major problem for the people that live in that area or do business there. There's no, I don't know what it's going to be like. They don't have answers on what it's going to be like, but very, very difficult, even more difficult than when you have winter storm coming through. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. Propane Plus, call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209 in Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com. And then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209, in Massachusetts, 508-252-3359, the Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Let's go to some of the Sunday sound, starting with Biden campaign co-chair Chris Coons claims Americans have serious doubts over Biden's mental fitness because he blames, oh no, this is all just because of the media. Listen to this on This Week.
Not just one moment in the 12-minute press conference. I mean, take a look at what we saw just recently, a handful of other events. Take a look, a few more.
There's been a response from the opposition, from Hamas. I said, America's back. And Mitterrand from France looked at me.
I mean, you know, Mitterrand, whether he's from Germany or France, he obviously is from France, but he's been dead for 25 years. I mean, there are a number of these incidents, and they may be gaffes. We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But this is what the American public is seeing, and it's raised concerns. Our poll shows over 80% responding saying that they think that Biden is too old to serve as president again.
Jonathan, if press coverage focuses relentlessly on things that don't represent Joe Biden's real body of work, you can push towards that kind of result. That poll should have been about who's actually working to secure our border. Joe Biden, who's worked across the aisle for months with a bipartisan group in the Senate, or Donald Trump, who is willfully killing the bipartisan border deal in the Senate, not because he wants to secure America, but to secure his own reelection. What that poll could have been about is who understands that our alliances keep us safer. Joe Biden, who's led 50 countries to come to the defense of Ukraine, or Donald Trump, who alarmingly last night bragged about a story where he claims he threatened a NATO ally to throw them to the Russian wolves if they didn't pay up. NATO isn't a protection racket, but it is a security alliance. So the substance, the difference, Joe Biden and Donald Trump and most elected officials make small gaffes just like the ones you just showed. That's not what matters. We are in a fight for the soul of our nation. And the idea that somehow Joe Biden forgot the date of his son's death is offensive and appalling. And what you should be focused on, in my view, what that poll should have focused on, what our nation should focus on is the ways Donald Trump is undermining rule of law, democracy, and our safety as a nation.
But we do have polling on the issues you're discussing, and the polling shows widespread disapproval of how President Biden has handled the border and also foreign policy. I mean, despite what you're saying.
Let's take that border issue, okay?
Yeah, the border is a mess. Isn't that amazing? Now, again, that is someone, Biden co-chair. But that is just, I think, that whole thing, that is just preposterous to say that he's actually fine. It's the media that's focusing on it. Now, his personal attorney appeared on Face the Nation. Does the president have a memory issue?
Last week alone, the president, in public remarks, mixed up the leaders of France, Germany, and he referred to Egypt as Mexico. Does the president have any memory problems?
He does not. I was in the interview room. And let me tell you one other vignette from the interview room. There were a couple of occasions when the special counsel, who had flagged at the beginning that sometimes he asks imprecise questions, asked questions that the president picked apart as a matter of logic. Mm-hmm. He showed that the questions didn't have a logical underpinning. Now, everybody in the room recognized that was the case. It showed the president was listening carefully and understood precisely what was wrong with those questions. Mm-hmm. I didn't come away from the special counsel's failure to ask precise questions and think to myself, he has mental acuity problems. I just thought he was asking bad questions.
You know, folks, you see there's a pattern here where the Biden people are trying to say, first of all, that guy's an enabler. They're trying to say, oh, he's fine. It's just the way the media is covering it. Boy, doesn't that sound familiar? Where else are we hearing that? Oh, that's right. We're hearing that from Governor McKee. We're hearing that from Governor McKee when it comes to the delay in what, you know, people are experiencing on the roads. According to Governor McKee, the problem is the way the media covers it. And then he was chastising the media, saying that they need to be honest about how the delays are. And was even taking issue, saying that he doesn't think that it's really that much of a delay. He said it's about a 10 or 15 minute backup, and that's all it really is. But now I want to go back to Face the Nation and his attorney. This is ludicrous because the audio is going to come out. They're trying to downplay it, but the fact of the matter, listen. They're not going to convince anyone. Biden, he doesn't have it. If he were no longer the president, he would just be an 81-year-old man, and it's no one's business, you know, what his memory is or what he can recall. But the problem is, not only is the president, but he's also running for re-election. I want to go back to Face the Nation, where they sent the president's personal attorney on to attack the report. This was a special prosecutor that Merrick Garland was the one that appointed.
Counsel determined no prosecution should happen in regard to the mishandling of classified information. This was a decision in your favor, but you asked the special counsel to reevaluate what you called, quote, highly prejudicial language. Did anyone appeal directly to Attorney General Garland or the Justice Department on that point?
Well, we made submissions in paper on those points, but let me just take a step back.
To the special counsel.
To the special counsel, and we reiterated them again on paper to the attorney general, because this is a report that went off the rails. It's a shabby work product. Let's take a step back. It starts with a legal conclusion that was foregone from the very beginning. The investigation could have been concluded in 2 or 3 months. It went on for over 15 months. And so along with the legal conclusion comes this flood of characterizations, factual misstatements, pejorative comments about the president that are inconsistent with DOJ policy and norms, and that, as you see, over the last 48 hours have been widely criticized by legal experts. This is not what prosecutors do. It is shoddy work product.
But it was the attorney general's commitment to make this public that put this in this space. Did you ever ask the Justice Department not to make it public?
No.
Or consider doing so?
No.
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 And what did the Attorney General say when you raised these issues to him?
It's evident that he had committed to make the report public the way that the special counsel had written it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the report that we have.
And that's the way it should be. This is preposterous. Now they're attacking. Kamala Harris, by the way, was attacking it. And now they're calling it partisan. It was your Attorney General, Merrick Garland, that appointed this guy. And at the base of it, they basically said, what's the point in going forward? He is an elderly man who has memory problems. We're not going to charge him. Folks, you're listening. It wouldn't stand up in court. They wouldn't get the conviction. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to on-the-scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePetro.com, DePetro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePetro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube. Everything we have, it's all waiting for you right there at the website. Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Choppa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU. 401-900-4678, Choppa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced. Whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Choppa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable. Can have everything under one roof. Call Choppa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Choppa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Let's go to recap on the hearings at the State House Oversight Committee regarding what happened with the bridge failure of 195 This is Channel 12, part of their recap.
But Rideout director Peter Alviti apologized for how this closure has upended everyone's lives and vowed to get answers.
I accept responsibility for this.
Over the span of 4 hours Monday, House and Senate lawmakers grilled state officials during an oversight committee hearing on the Washington Bridge.
Rhode Islanders deserve answers.
DOT Director Peter Alviti, the governor's senior deputy chief of staff, and an engineer contracted by RIDOT went over the bridge's design, when the critical failure was observed, and the process underway to determine how and when they can fix it. But many questions went unanswered.
Is the bridge coming down? So yeah, I'm going to ask that question.
I want to know that, too.
Alviti often deferred to the forensic analysis happening as we speak, an in-depth look at the bridge that he says will provide more clarity on the situation, including when pins in the bridge broke.
That's not a sudden break. That's an old break.
While he wasn't at the hearing, Governor Dan McKee also faced scrutiny over his previous comments on traffic.
People that have to drive on this bridge every day, how are they supposed to feel secure when we've got the leader of the state saying, oh, it's only 10 or 15 minutes, and everybody knows that's false.
Alviti doubled down on previous statements that closing the bridge was the best decision to keep people safe and got choked up when asked about safety.
When I wake up every day and I go to sleep every night, that's all that's on my mind.
Now, of course, there was much more discussed during that.
There was. I thought some of the voices, especially Representative John Breehan, I thought he framed it very well. House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale, I thought he did a very good job. I want to play you some of the sound of it. You know, it's tough because, in essence, they don't have the engineers. They apparently dumped a load of documents on them. As they were, you know, I think on Friday is when they dumped the documents on them. And so they didn't get a full chance. You know, if you're some of the legislators, they didn't get a full chance to review a lot of the documents without a lot of notice of when this was going to happen. So as far as the hearing. But I think Representative Breehan, I thought he was very effective in pointing out just how ludicrous it was, Governor McKee telling people, and, you know, it's just about 10 to 15 minutes. That didn't serve any purpose. And then one of the governor's key advisors tried to run cover. But I want to play, this is Representative John Breehan, who I thought he was very good. Here's what it sounded like.
That's the travel on 195. Everyone feels and has seen it. God forbid that there's a flat or a fender bender. Everyone knows what that causes for backup. And I'm talking about when both sides are operational at full capacity. You know the kind of traffic that can be generated. Director, you said at the outset of your comments, you said, we are going to be honest with you. And I think that that's a very important thing that we all expect as legislators, as taxpayers, as citizens. But I guess the question I have for Mr. Allman is, I look back and I see a post by Kim Kalunian on X, and it says, and this is posted on January 25th, and it says, Governor Dan McKee said yesterday that the Washington Bridge issues are only adding 10 to 15 minutes of extra commute time for drivers. He was pressed on that, and what are you experiencing behind the wheel? So I guess my question to you, Mr. Allman, is when we know that's demonstrably false, we see what's happening on the highways. I guess one question is, how is that at all helpful to the people in this room who have to communicate with their constituents? Because my constituents, and I think a lot of our constituents, don't have the will or the time or the ability to look at a pile of documents that's dumped. And I do agree with Vice Chair Casimiro. The fact that this is dumped to us on a Friday afternoon for a Monday hearing, it's, you know, that's just a whole separate issue. But I don't think that that's particularly helpful. But how are we as legislators and leaders in the state supposed to communicate with our constituents, if this is the stuff that is coming from the top, and if honesty is supposed to be the best policy here, how are our constituents, how are the citizens of Rhode Island, the people that have to drive on this bridge every day, how are they supposed to feel secure about and confident in the information that they're being given is accurate and real when we've got the leader of the state saying, oh, it's only 10 or 15 minutes, and everybody knows that's false? What are we supposed to say to our constituents? What is the governor saying to the people of Rhode Island? And how can they feel like what they're getting, as the director said, is the truth? Because that's not it, Mr. Allman, and you know that. And the governor knows that. So why double down on it?
Excellent question. I wish I could say he was then given an excellent answer, but he wasn't. And Governor McKee basically sent staff members out there to field these questions, kind of get, you know, muddied up a little bit. But he doesn't care. And I want to go back to Rep. Breehan after their rambling response.
Thank you. I think I would just merely comment that obviously we're in this hearing. We get these documents. An old boss once said to me, you know, you're bringing me the problems. Bring me the solutions. And I think that's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get the solutions. But we're not going to get the solutions unless we acknowledge that right now we have Carmageddon out there every single rush hour in the morning and at night. And we're trying to push the ocean through a garden hose. And we need to just be honest about that and figure out how that's going to get fixed and fast, because we're going to run out of answers to tell people other than you're just going to have to wait. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, that's not what they want to hear.
Well, that was the line of the day. Carmageddon. Folks, again, I think the reps, I want to credit them. I think they did their job. They did as much as they could. But the problem is there's no easy answers with this. Notice also Governor McKee was nowhere to be found. He could have strolled in. He said, oh, I'll take some questions here. Nope. Not Coach McKee. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. I want to go back. House Senate oversight hearing. DOT in front of them. Someone I thought was very good is Representative Solomon from Warwick. Listen to this exchange yesterday, or Monday, I should say, with the State House.
Rep. Solomon?
Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it a requirement that the load rating be posted on the bridges?
Not if there's no posting for definitive bridges. I think there's a standard amount. If there are no limits on weight limitations, then I don't know that they're actually posted. I'll check and we'll report back to you. But I believe any of the bridges that do not have a weight limitation are not posted. But I'll check and I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, so prior to December 2023, when was the last time the load rating had been posted for the Washington Bridge?
I don't believe we've ever had to post a load limitation on the Washington Bridge.
Okay. Was it ever recommended that a load limitation be posted on the bridge?
I've asked my engineers that. They're not aware of any recommendations that came to them for posting the bridge to less than what its capacity is.
Okay, I'm going to ask the same question to Jeff. Jeff, are you aware of any load posting requirements?
I'm not familiar with it, no.
Okay, how about for this particular bridge? Have you heard of it being requested that a load be posted for this bridge?
Formally, no.
How about informally?
I know we submitted an RFI. It may have been tied to what the representative was describing, asked for clarification on the load rating criteria. That RFI was still pending.
Okay, so what type of clarification was necessary?
We had done, our sub-consultant, VN, had done an analysis, and it was still preliminary in nature, but they were getting different results.
Okay. Had they questioned potentially the calculations, previous calculations of loads?
I can't speak to the details of it.
Why can't you speak to the details of it?
It was their analysis.
Okay. But you did read the analysis, correct?
It's been a while.
But you had read it?
I don't think I've read their analysis, no. I mean, I was part of the correspondence.
Okay. Just for clarification purposes, because I know there's been a lot in the media about NDAs being signed. Were any NDAs signed in regard to this particular project?
Nobody at DOT has ever signed an NDA.
Okay. How about any contractors?
Not to my knowledge. NDAs are not required by anyone at DOT or our contractors. What we do require are confidentiality forms to be signed. And the reason for that is it's not a policy of DOT, it's a policy of Department of Administration and the procurement of projects. You don't want, during the analysis of a competitive bid or a competition for a design-build contract, we don't want employees who are reviewing those and assessing those handing out information to competitors to give them unfair advantages. So people participating in that procurement process, a procurement process only, are required to sign confidentiality, not non-disclosure, confidentiality, which basically says, don't tell the competitors what their competition is doing or pricing the project at, because that is a conflict of interest. Also, in the conflict of interest is the employee stating that they have no financial or other kind of personal ties to any of the contractors that they're doing the assessment of, which would give an unfair advantage if they favored one over the other, right? So the employees participating in the procurement process and part of the decision-making and scoring of the companies are asked to sign a confidentiality agreement that keeps intact the integrity and honesty of the procurement process. Outside of that, in terms of any of the work that we do or any of the discussions that we have or any of the correspondence that we do, there is no NDA or confidential agreement signed by anyone at DOT or contractors.
Okay, so getting back, so there was never any concern as to the tension tie capacity being significantly overestimated?
The tension tie rod?
Correct.
No, this is the first instance of this.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that's a testimony being told today. And my just final question here today is, you know, I just want to talk about the elephant in the room. I know there's a lot of...
By the way, if you have any correspondence in that nature, it would be helpful if you provided it to us so that
Absolutely.
We can make it part of our forensic and provide it to the forensic analysis team.
Absolutely.
So that they can help determine what some of the problems are here.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Great.
But just kind of going back to the elephant in the room, because I know a lot of the testimony here today has been talked about and about the bridge with 20% match, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the people of the state of Rhode Island want to know, one way or another, definitively, is the bridge coming down? So I'm going to ask that question.
I want to know that, too. I want to know that as much or more than anyone in the state does. And the information that we'll be getting in the next several weeks from these seven companies that we have defining the scope will actually provide us the information decisively that say, this is the scope of the work that needs to be done to create the new bridge that will carry people safely for a long time. And the information we'll be getting will determine that. We'll give you the answer to that.
Thank you.
Now, I thought that was Representative Solomon.
I thought it was very solid. There were certainly some people that stood out more than others. I find it a little tedious to listen to. A lot of times they didn't have information. There were some things learned, but by and large, bottom line, I thought, you know, it was better than I thought. It was an opportunity for various individuals to, and certainly be a little aggressive with the questioning. And I did like the fact that some recognized the opportunity, nothing wrong with that, in order to get some of the spotlight and show their constituents how aggressive they can be. I found it interesting that the East Bay seemed to be more timid than I would have thought, because they're impacted the most. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. So it's a snowy day, if you can. Good day to stay off the roads. We already know the roads have been a problem to begin with. I can't imagine getting on the roads is going to get any better. If you get a chance, if you'd like to hear or read, I should say, read about the Davies Vocational Tech, the 15-year-old student, teacher there. I interviewed the student's mother last night. We have the video up on the website, DePietro.com. This is a continuing. The state police are investigating. The state police don't believe there's criminal. The behavior by the teacher, based on the evidence so far, could change, but you could see for yourself, wildly inappropriate. And I want to take issue with some of the comments from, I understand other teachers want to support their colleague and the teachers union, they feel they want to support their colleague, but this notion that, hey, you know, love is love, and you know, that you're talking about a 39-year-old teacher, and the allegations are that there was inappropriate conduct towards a 15-year-old student. And if the text messages are authentic, if the voicemails are authentic, again, I want to reiterate, these are just allegations. Everyone deserves their day in court. But if they prove to be authentic, I take issue with this notion of love is love. It is irrelevant that, you know, a same-sex relationship situation. It's inappropriate if it all pans out. The conduct is, the teacher is the one in the position of authority. The teacher has the student in the class, texting, voicemail, supposedly even taking the student places, giving the students gifts, but what's inside of the text, certainly in the voicemail, again, if everything washes out, certainly seems to be very controlling, manipulative behavior. So for the teachers union to try to, or at least one member of it, to try to dismiss this as love is love, it shouldn't be the situation. The student is there to learn, from what we understand, and again, according to the mother who I interviewed, happens to be a good basketball player, just wants to focus on her schoolwork and basketball. You have a mother that's, you know, wants to see the full potential of her daughter, see how far she can go. That is not a matter of, and shouldn't be dismissed the way some people are trying to dismiss this as love is love. Love is love would be two consenting adults, or even if it was two teenagers that may be in some form of a relationship. But no, this should be, she's 15 and the teacher is 39. So this business of some people saying, well, you know, that's their private business, love is love. No, excuse me. It's not their private. She's the teacher. She's the supposedly Western Civ teacher at the school. It's totally inappropriate. And the voicemail, if it all is, in fact, authenticated, authentic, of, you know, leave the, this is just between us and don't tell anyone what we talk about and you need to be loyal to me and all this other stuff. No, that people are confusing. This is not a matter of, oh, well, you know, if it's a same-sex relationship, it's no one's business. There should be no relationship, regardless of that. If you have a teacher at a school who happens to be, in this case, 39, doesn't matter whether they're 39 or 29 or 24, whatever. It's the teacher and the pupil. Wrong. Absolutely not. This cavalier attitude that people try to dismiss. And as far as, well, it's no one's business. No, it is people's business. There are other people that have children at the school. Ridiculous. So the teacher's out on paid leave. You can read about it on the website, dipietro.com, and hear the interview with the mother of the student. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Let's go to the House Senate hearing. This is House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale did a very effective job questioning DOT and staff of Governor McKee's office. Let's pick up some of the testimony.
Sure. We have some inconsistencies in the photos where people were pointing out the dates are manipulated. You can see that there's two different typefaces used. They're at a different level, et cetera, et cetera. That calls into question if anything in the report can be relied on.
No, it does not.
Oh, I think that's it certainly does to me.
I think that's a reflection of maybe the poor editing capabilities of whoever made the edit to it. I don't know. I don't know if it means anything more. I believe whatever information, however it was made, was accurate and correct.
Okay, then why over these 4 years or this period with four different inspection companies do we have reports that have the exact same verbiage, including spelling errors, the exact same dates underneath on photos? Why is that happening if this original information is getting to DOT? Why are we seeing the same verbiage used?
I asked that same question.
So now I'm asking it, so hopefully I'll get an answer.
So the answer is this. The reports themselves and the format of them and even the system that's used for reporting was developed from an AASHTO standard. It's a national standard of bridge reports with the review and approval of the Federal Highway Administration. So these are the way we're going to report on it. This is the method we're going to use. Part of that reporting process is a system that these companies go on as a central depository for their inspection reports. And there are some fields of information that they fill in that are pre-populated with some of the original information. So that if no change is in place, that text, even though the contractor and the engineering consultant that's performing it is a different contractor, they're using a pre-formatted text that they just leave in place if the condition they find is the same as the one that pre-existed. Follow me?
I'm following.
So that's the explanation that I got of why some of those fields information appear to be the same, even if there was a misspelling from year to year, because there was no change in that particular aspect of that bridge inspection. Therefore, the next company populating those forms left that data the way it was.
Great. So when we get the original stuff, we'll be able to see if that consistency remains. I'm going to go directly to Mr. Klein. Span 7, when it was inspected by AECOM in July, was that the company who did that inspection?
The July inspection was done by AECOM.
It was,
yes.
Okay. Did you get the original materials from the inspector, or did it go to both you guys, the DOT as well as VHB?
I'm not sure about what you mean by original materials.
The photos, the reports, the findings. Anything that was noteworthy?
The inspection reports were provided to us, but they were provided to Rideout first. So we received them, I believe, after the closure.
Did you get the Rideout version of the report, or did you get the report from the actual person who inspected it?
It would have been the
there is. Let me.
Director, I'm speaking to the engineer, please.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to look back at what we received, but I believe it was the final version. I don't think we have anything
So you don't have, you have what DOT had provided us with?
Okay. I would assume so.
Okay,
let me just add to that. The reports that we provided you with are the reports that we get. They're not altered in any way. They're not edited by DOT staff.
Director, all due respect, you just told me that four different companies that inspect made these reports,
right,
copy and pasted information.
Correct, but that's them. That's not us at DOT. We don't alter the reports in any way.
Excellent.
They fill in the reports. They fill in the reports. They provide them to us. We review them. Federal Highway Administration reviews them. If there are any corrections that need to be made, Federal Highway or we comment back to the company, they make whatever changes has to be made to make the corrections, not us.
To this form? This format?
To those forms.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Again, Mr. Klein, per industry best practices, what is the standard physical distance an inspector must be from the object or area he's inspecting?
My scope on the project is design. I can't comment on what the inspection protocols are.
Okay,
for the contract.
Further confirming, we definitely need inspectors here.
We can report back to you on what the proper distance is.
That would be great, and we can ask the inspectors when they come in front of us. During the July inspection by AECOM, was there physical access either on staging or through a boom truck or some sort of a physical lift for the inspectors when they made that inspection?
That would be a question for the inspectors.
Does the administration know?
Yes, they use lifts from the barges below. They use catwalks and whatever access is on the bridge itself.
And they were employed in that July inspection. They were used. They were actually physically able to get up and view the
areas. I don't know. I don't have a firsthand knowledge of what they use, but yes, they use various kinds of lifts and supports to get them in a position to inspect the bridges.
Would it be appropriate for them to use a drone instead?
I don't know. I suppose so.
That would be in keeping with best industry practices for a drone to inspect rather than a person?
I don't know that one or the other. I think we prefer and we have them inspected eyes on so that a human is directly there looking at it and can touch it, feel it, or interact with it in a way.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Have you ever requested or have any reports ever been delivered to you orally to the department as opposed to in written form?
Inspections?
Yes, any reports. Any reporting from someone you paid to do an inspection, have they ever orally communicated the information as opposed to a written document?
Not to me.
To DOT.
I have no knowledge of whether or not anybody's commuted orally any inspection results to any members of my staff. I have 700 people that work for me, and they talk to people all the time. And
that is DOT Director Peter Alviti. That is also House Minority Leader Republican Mike Chippendale. Just part of the hearing, you know, it can get difficult. There's so many different reports. Many of the people involved are not in the room. So, but just to give you a taste, I'll give them credit. The House, they were doing the best they could, but it's a tough situation to look into because there's so much that's not available to them. You're listening to The John DePietro Show.